Hi. Try it one more time. Hello. Okay. We're going to probably get going in just a couple of minutes. I want to wait and see if anybody else comes. We're a little bit early yet. But how many, anybody here for the first time tonight? Yeah, I was going to say, I thought there were a few. On the little table back there is a little bit of a review sheet. Not much information. We'll go over everything again. But some of you who are here for the first time might want to pick that up just in case. And come on in and sit wherever you're comfortable. I do not bite, so don't feel like you all have to sit way back there. If any of you want to try the mats, to sit down on the cushions for a little bit and then decide that's not for you, you can get up and move. So this is a great time to just give it a shot if you want to. Getting up and down is perfectly all right. I do it all the time. I know it's been really, really warm outside, so I'm going to try to get it cool in here without totally freezing us out. And I'm old enough that I have personal summers, so sometimes I'm not the one who should be in charge of the air conditioning. Okay, we're just going to go ahead and start, and people can kind of come in as they want. My name is Sandy Carlson, for those of you who are here for the first time. I'll do a little bit of an introduction. You are here at Buddhism in a Nutshell, Session 2, and today is June 17th, 2014. And the reason I'm reading that off is because we do make audio recordings of these classes for people to listen to later. We put them up on our website behind a members-only area, and it's we do the audio. We don't save any of the video transcriptions or any of those things, so you don't have to worry about that. So welcome. Tonight what we're going to do, just to kind of lay out the plan, is we're going to do a brief review, a little bit of the general history of Buddhism, and we're going to get into a little bit more detailed discussion about the Four Noble Truths, and again do a little bit of practice on some meditation. So, everybody's good. Hi there. Okay. Let's go ahead and start here. First of all, for those who don't know, again, my name is Sandy Carlson, and I am going to be leading this class tonight. I have been studying Buddhism for a very long time, but I've been really working in depth since I came here to the Kadampa Center and found Geshe-la and some very specific teachers that I work with. So I am what I call I have a teaching background. Okay, it is in physical education K through 12. And working with the handicapped, but I actually work in television, go figure. This is a beginner class on Buddhism, so we're going to be skipping along the top. And I'm going to be very clear about this because I think we've got some people in here that have a little bit more knowledge and have been working on some things and studying, so there's a lot of book knowledge in this room. And I'm going to try not to allow us to deep dive too much because this is meant to be a beginner course. And we have so many other courses that you will have access to. So it's one of those things where I think a lot of people have a lot of book learning, and some of you are reminding me of myself from from many years ago when you have all this book learning, but you don't know what you don't know, and so you've got some black holes you're trying to fill in here. Okay, and so I remember that. I remember being there, and I think that this is phenomenal that you're starting here, and a lot of this is going to be very much repetition for you, and it's going to be very familiar to you. And then there may be some little gaps that we'll fill in for you, and then to let you know that we have so many other courses. So, again, this is Buddhism in a Nutshell. Our other courses are Discovering Buddhism, which is a 2-year course that takes place on Monday nights. Some of this information is on that sheet. It takes place on Monday nights, and we have many, many very advanced teachers and students that have been studying for years teaching those courses. And while we're going to be covering topics like karma and rebirth and some of those, you know, we're going to have like 15 to 20 minutes to go over them, and you will have 5 or 6 weeks to go over them in that class. So again, we're going to skip right along the surface. Discovering Buddhism on Monday nights is finishing the 13th module of 14 modules. And so they're going to be starting another round here in the next few months. This is a perfect time if any of you are interested in that. There won't be a 14th module that they teach because that's a special integration module that you'd work on your own time. Wednesday nights we have a Lam Rim class, and that's with Geshe Gelug Choda, who is our resident teacher here at Kadampa Center. And the Lam Rim, we're going to talk about that a little bit in this class, is a, it is kind of, that's really the first Buddhism for Dummies book, okay? It is the step-by-step path to enlightenment, all written out here, do A, do B, do C, and it will take you right through to enlightenment. I make it sound very easy, and it is very easy. It's easy to say. It's not easy to practice. But that's Wednesday nights, and that's with Geshe Gelug. You're all invited to come to that as well. We're actually at the beginning part of these books and stuff, so feel free to come. Geshe is a phenomenal teacher, and you can learn so much from that. Fridays we're going to have a more advanced class that we do have requirements for, but all of the information will be up on our website. And then Sundays we have two sessions with Geshe Gelug. Again, we have a 9 a.m. session and a 10:45 session. And our Sunday teachings are very much open to everybody, and it's more about basically being happy and starting to learn some of the tools. And we have people of all faiths, all ages, all sizes, all everything coming to Sunday, actually coming to all of the classes and things that we offer here at Kadampa Center. Now, we don't assume that anybody that's coming here to this class or to any class actually in the center are wanting to convert. If you're not a practicing Buddhist, we're not about trying to convert. It's not about proselytizing. We're teaching methods and things that everybody can use to just have a happier life and be kinder, better people. And so this actually is for everybody. And we're open to all faiths, all spiritualities, and all cultures here. Again, I'm just going to try to do a little bit of a review so that we can kind of get through some things. We also do, this class goes for 5 weeks, and then this class will end, and then we have Introduction to Meditation, which is a five to six week class, whether it's on Tuesday nights or Thursday nights, but the two classes alternate. Now, we will do some introductory meditation here. Okay, so I'm going to set you up with some meditation here in just a minute, but these are just kind of very much intros, okay, just to kind of get you a little bit comfortable with it, and then if you find that it's working for you, then you can take a little bit more in-depth course on an intro to meditation. So all of this information is up on our website, kadampacenter.org. So please help yourself to that information. We also have some of the meditations in the course, things that I'm working with here, they're up on our website. Okay, so you can go get these handouts, you can go get these specific meditations that I'll be leading you through, and some of this information like the Four Noble Truths, these are all on handouts that are up on our website. So if you go to kadampa-center.org, go to Spiritual Programs, and under Spiritual Programs you'll find Buddhism in a Nutshell, click on that, and at the bottom of that page you'll find all of the PDF links so that you can print all of these out and practice them at home. The meditations and the meditation postures that I talked about and will continue to talk about this whole course come from a book How to Meditate by Kathleen McDonald, which is actually one of my favorite books. So if you're interested in that type of thing, I'll always try to let you know where it's coming from or where I've got it and the resource that you can get it. Okay. Again, I always feel like I've got diarrhea of the mouth up here. Are there any questions from last time at all or anything that I said? And you guys didn't ask hardly anything last time. You have got to start talking. Okay, no questions. Not yet. Okay. Okay, I think to start, one of the things and the ways I'm going to do this is at the beginning of the class, we're going to do a brief meditation, and at the end, if I don't run out of time, I'd like to do a very brief meditation at the end. And what I'd like to do is start the class with the meditation that we ended so that you get a chance to at least do a couple of times, each of the meditations a couple of times, okay? And if you guys have any questions or anything about some of this stuff afterwards, we can do it. But I'd like to start by doing a very brief meditation. For those of you that are new tonight, we have what we call a 7-point meditation posture, and I'm going to kind of walk you through it. Again, there is nothing spiritual or holy about the posture. It is all about being able to sustain a comfortable position for a long period of time. And this is something that the Tibetan Buddhists have been working on, you know, for 2,500 years. So they pretty much got the lock on how to meditate. So I'm going to kind of walk you through it. Anybody in this room never meditated before? Okay, good. All right. So I'm going to walk you through the 7-point meditation posture, and then we're going to do the meditation that we did at the end of the last session, that scanning the body one. Meditation, and we're in a gompa, which is place of meditation, okay, and it's about becoming familiar, having your mind become familiar with something. That's what meditation is all about, so that's why we're going to kind of walk through these things so that we're doing the same thing every time in order to train the mind, okay? So, I'm going to read this time because I do this and I do this in my head and I'm finding that I'm conflicting with what I want to say and what I would prefer to actually read it so that you get it the right way instead of the sandy way. All right? I'm finding that was kind of conflicting last time. So, 7-point meditation posture. Okay, number one is the legs. Okay? If possible, you're going to sit on the floor with your legs in the Vajra position. That's the full lotus. We've heard of that. Each foot is placed sole upward on the thigh of the opposite leg, and this position can be difficult to achieve, but once you get comfortable with it, it's easy to do over time. But it's not essential, okay? You know, and I'm not going to read. It sounds so stilted, doesn't it? All right. You know what? Let's just work our way up. If you're sitting in a chair, place your feet just solidly on the ground. Okay, you want to be sitting up straight. All right. If you're sitting in a chair, lean forward just a little bit. You don't want to be resting your back against the seat. Just sit a little bit more toward the front of the seat. You can either place your hands on your knees, or in this tradition, we take our right hand and we place it on the palm of our left. We touch our thumbs lightly together, and we place this in our lap. Okay, so we've got our feet on the ground, we've got our back is straight, shoulders are kind of in a regal position, we're kind of opening our chest up, and what that does is that opens up our lungs a little bit and gives it easier breathing. You have your arms just a little bit out from your body, and that allows that air to move, so we're not just like hugging our sides, it allows air to move around you, keeps you a little bit cooler. All right, again, shoulders back. You have your head tilted slightly forward, just a little bit, and that's going to elongate the neck a little bit. One of the things I like to do in my mind is kind of pretend like there's a string from my head pulling up, and that gets my neck nice and long. Relieves some of that stress a little bit in the neck and the shoulder area. So tilt your head slightly forward. Your jaw and mouth, you normally will have a little bit of a closed mouth, and your tongue is behind your teeth up on the roof of your mouth. And this helps with all of the saliva that can tend to kind of build up. So you don't clench your teeth, nothing like that. Just your mouth and jaw are relaxed. Your tongue is on the upper palate, just behind your teeth. Your eyes are, many people are very comfortable with their eyes completely closed. And if that's easy to do for you, then go ahead and do it. Many times that will cause you to be a little bit drowsy. So if you can possibly have your eyes slightly open and just gazing about maybe 4 or 5 feet in front of you, you're not focusing on anything. But that way you're just not, you don't want to be too open, because then you can be easily distracted by something in the room. But if you have your eyes closed, then sometimes you can tend to be a little bit sleepy. Okay, so legs, arms, back, eyes, jaw and mouth, your tongue, your head. Those are the 7 points of your posture to think about. Okay, so the first thing we're going to do is just calm our minds. We're going to focus our attention on our breathing. Just breathing naturally and become present in the moment and place where you are. Focus your mind on the rising and falling of your shoulders and chest as you inhale and exhale gently. And allow your mind to settle and become calm and present and ready to engage in meditation. We want to set an altruistic motivation for our meditation session. All right, we're going to do this every time. First, think that you're meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate and develop your mind to become a wiser and kinder person and able to be of benefit to all beings. Focus your attention on your physical body and find the most suitable sitting position for meditation. Spine is straight and erect. A position that you can be aware and awake, but not too stiff or rigid. Focus your attention on the lowermost point of your body, where your body is in contact with the earth or the chair, the cushion. And feel the substance and earthy character of your body. Concentrate for a moment on that contact and on the weight and substance of this physical form. Pay attention to the character of your mind and your consciousness while you're focusing here. Now slowly and mindfully move your attention upward through your body. Pay close attention to every aspect of your body and your physical sensations. Note areas of tension and relax them. Note sensations of coolness or warmth. Note places where one part of your body is touching another. Move upwards through your legs and your hips, your hands and your lap. Note the curves of your body. Move upward, your belly and your waist, your arms. Continue to move upward, the rising and falling of your chest with your breathing, the curves of your shoulders. Release any tension that you find there. Keep moving upward slowly and mindfully. Pay special attention to your shoulders and neck and jaw, and if there's tension there, try to relax those areas. Move still upward, the tilt of your head, until you reach the crown of your head. Allow your attention to rest at your crown for just a moment. Pay attention to the character of your mind and your consciousness while focusing here. Is your mind's character different while concentrating here than it was when you were focusing on the lowermost point? And what differences can you note? Now slowly move your attention back downward through your body in the same way. Move slowly, mindfully, noting everything about your body as you move your attention back down. Bring your attention all the way back down to the cushion of the floor or the chair where your body is in contact. And again, focus your concentration at this point. Note the character of your consciousness when focusing here. And think about the differences that you may have noticed when your mind stream was concentrating here versus when it was at the top of your crown. Finally, let's dedicate all of this positive energy and any insights to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. And bring your attention back to the room. Okay. Now that actually is a meditation that I do quite often. All right, like we talked about last time, in Tibetan Buddhism there are two different types of meditation, concentration meditation and analytical meditation. Okay, the concentration meditation that we do at the beginning of our sessions is where we're kind of training the mind and working with our mind. So anytime we're concentrating on one thing, like the body or the breath, things like that, we're practicing. And so it's nice when I sit down to start meditation sessions. I've got a couple of just kind of go-to meditations. And a lot of the basics we're going to learn right here in this class are things that I still use to this day. I've used for years. And that's one of them. And I kind of play with the way that my mind moves up my body. I don't know why. I'm going to explain how mine, why my mind works. But I kind of tend to do this swirl thing going up. Took me a while to figure out that I was actually doing it instead of floating up, or people do different things for some reason. Mine just kind of goes in a swirl till I reach and then goes back down. It's just weird. But you'll find it. Start to pay attention when you're doing this thing. How is your mind actually doing it? Are you floating up? Are you twirling up? Just think about that. You know, you don't have to answer the questions. Just start to be aware of how your mind is working during these things. But it just will help to give you a few insights. Concentration and analytical, okay? Concentration and analytical. We do the concentration meditations to really strengthen our mind, okay? It's kind of like going to the gym. You know, you're going to become a bodybuilder and go to Mr. Universe. Well, you're going to go to the gym and start to work out, and you're going to work into, let's turn our cell phones off, shall we? It's working to strengthen your mind, okay? Because once you have a stronger mind, it will allow you to do more analytical meditation where you can actually think about things all the way through. That's when you sit down and you start working on concepts or working on things like anger or equanimity, some different things like that. But without that ability to stay with it, okay? So those are the two. So there are... And this is where Meditation 101 is phenomenal. We have some great teachers on that, and they'll explain this in much more depth. But a meditation session is always going to start with a motivation. Actually, any action that you do, we really want to set a good intention for it. Well, we're going to talk about this in a little bit. Okay, so we set an intention, a positive reason for doing it. And then you need to just calm your mind, like we all. For instance, today, I've had a day. It's been one of those funny days. A lot of things going on, crazy busy with work, family stuff, phone calls. I had one on the way here when I was trying to be mindful and concentrate about what I was going to go through tonight, make sure, you know, I'm teaching and explaining things that, you know, are going to stay with it. And I was anything but mindful. I was mindful. I had a mindful of stuff tonight. Okay, so... It's learning to work with the mind to just settle and be able to let go of some of this other stuff so that you can be focused. And so because of the practices, I actually got here a little bit early and, you know, just sat for a little bit just to breathe, just so we can let everything else go. Okay? I mean, right now, sitting here, we have so many things we could be doing. All of you do, I'm sure. There's a million things you need to do when you get home. There's things you need to do for tonight. There's things you might need to do to prep for tomorrow, whether it's work, whether it's family. But we're sitting here. I mean, that's a lot of effort. And so it's now, let's not waste this effort, and let's be focused here instead of thinking about all those things we should do at home. Right? But we're also... trying to learn to work with our mind. And there's an analogy for this because that I've always loved because I use it all the time. We're trying to use our mind to work with our mind. And so that's going to take some practice because it's like being a mechanic working on a car while it's racing down the freeway. Okay, so this is what the meditation tools are all about, is giving us the tools to be able to work with the mind while the mind's moving. Okay? All right. Can't believe how fast time goes. Okay, brief review, very brief. You guys know this. The book Buddhism in a Nutshell is available in the bookstore. It was written, and there's an audio CD in there by several of our FPMT instructors, FPMT Foundation of the Preservation for the Mahayana Tradition. Okay, Amy Miller, Venerable Amy Miller, who is a Buddhist nun, very phenomenal. She has been here and taught here. In fact, she's on retreat right now, I believe over in Nepal, but she's phenomenal. She helped her write that book, and she does the narration for it on an audio CD. So it's available here in the bookstore. That book has so much more information that I'm going to be able to share here because we've got an hour and a half, I think five or six times, and she's got, you know, like I don't know how many hours and hours of information on that book. It's phenomenal. So if you get a chance and are interested and want to get a better understanding of the things that I'm covering in this class, that book's available. Another book, because I had people asking me, and I'm not sure if we've got this in the bookstore right now, but believe it or not, Buddhism for Dummies is really good. Okay, I probably have 5 copies of this because being one of the leaders of this class, I tend to have a lot of people ask me a lot of different questions, and I always recommend this book. I loan it out 52 million times. I've actually had to rebuy copies because but it's just got the basics. It's got good basics. And the Buddhism for Dummies books, you know, you can go to any page and read. You don't have to read it cover to cover. It's a good, cheap book. And so everybody's always asking me, this is a good one. Okay? So that covered that. All right. Very, very quickly, let's go through some of the review of the history that we did the other day. Okay? And our mic. Chris has the mic. Okay, we're going to, for those of you that are new, if you've got questions, I'm going to have you talk into our microphone. It's not so much for this class, because we do want everybody to be able to hear, it's really irritating when those of us that try to listen to the audio have that, we can hear, oh, somebody's got a question, and then there's this big pause, and then they start answering, and you don't know what the question was, so you lose context. So I'm going to try to get us into the habit of talking into the microphone. Okay, so Shakyamuni Buddha was actually born Prince Siddhartha Gautama over in India about 2,500, 2,600 years ago. All right, he was born to a very wealthy family. His father was a king. And when he was born, they had a seer come in and do a reading. Okay, and a wise man basically said that, told the king, your son is either going to be a great king or he's going to be a holy man. And of course the king wanted him to stay in his father's footsteps, and he did everything that he could to take away all of the things that would touch Gautama's heart. Okay, so the stories about how very compassionate and loving he was. So they kept this cocoon of safety around the young prince. He never saw anybody grow old. He never saw anybody die. He never saw any pain or suffering. He never saw anything but this beautiful, beautiful, wonderful life of wealth and riches and happiness. Okay, so it's complete. We do that with our own children sometimes, don't we? We just don't want any pain to touch them at all. When the prince became a young man, okay, and became a little bit more curious, he actually left, got a few of his buddies, a few of his friends, servants, to take him outside of the castle, outside of the kingdom. And he saw 4 sights. Okay, does anybody remember what those were? He saw 4 things that changed his life. Anybody remember? Dead body.
Sick person.
An old person and a monk. Correct. So he did. He saw four sights, a sick person, an old person, a dead body, and a wandering mendicant. And he was shocked by all of these things. He'd never seen them, and he asked his servant that was with him about each and every one of them, and this person was explaining, well, that, you know, that's a dead body. We're all going to die. Everybody is going to die. This is the world that we live in, and this is going to happen to you. It's going to happen to everybody that you care for, and there's nothing really we can do about it. And in sickness, same thing. People get sick. That's what happens. Okay? We haven't seen it, but that's what happens. It could happen at any time. It could happen to any one of us. All right? Aging, that's what happens over time. We age and we die. That's the process. Okay? And the monk, he didn't understand why this person that was living in all of this suffering, how he could have such a peaceful and happy mind. And so he saw these four sights. They changed his mind. And because of that, he left the castle. And he decided that he needed to go learn a little bit more. He needed to figure this out. He was not satisfied with his life. He was not satisfied with not knowing and understanding all of this. So he went and worked with several teachers. I mean, for years, he went and studied with many, many different teachers, and he learned everything that they had to offer, and it was still not enough. And so he kept trying new teachers, trying new methods and learning everything, and finally, none of that was working for him. And he kind of fell in with these five other monks that were in the same thought process and kind of went to the extreme of asceticism, where they just subsisted on the least amount of food. I mean, the stories are one grain of rice and just a little bit of water, and they tried that for years. And you see those pictures, I think you see some of those pictures of the Buddha where every rib is showing. And they just tried to go so far. And the Buddha discovered that it was too far. He couldn't even meditate. All he was thinking about was food. This was not working. And the stories go that he was by a river and that a musician was floating in a canoe or a raft going down the river, tuning a musical instrument. And the musician was telling him, you know, if you string it too tight, it won't play, and if you string it too loose, it won't play. So there's a middle way. And this was the kind of the thought process for just trying to not go too far. He'd lived that life of beauty and luxury and ease and complete, you know, freedom and safety, and then all the way to the complete asceticism and giving up everything, and both extremes just didn't work. So this is when he came to the middle way. And he went and he sat under a tree at Bodh Gaya, and he worked and he looked at his mind. And that's how he became enlightened. He looked at his mind. He took the time to sit and meditate and discovered that all of the unhappiness, all of the things were in his mind. All of these things were in his mind. And even at the end, you know how your mind will just play those tricks. Oh, you can't do this. You can't do this. What makes you think that you can learn these things, or what makes you think that you're capable of doing this? We've all had, I think, our minds tell us these things. Well, at the very, very end, they're saying that when dawn broke, that the Buddha finally fought off these last of these obscurations and actually reached out to touch the ground. That's symbolized in some of these different tankas up here, touched the ground as if to call the earth to his witness, and that's when he was able to reach enlightenment. And we say that reaching enlightenment, actually the Buddha means enlightened one, and our definition of enlightenment is fully awakening, removing all obstacles, all negativities, okay, and fully developing all virtuous states of mind. So we're going to talk all the time about definitions so that we're always on the same page. The definition of enlightenment from a Buddhist perspective means full awakening, removing all obscurations, all negative states of mind, and fully developing all virtuous states of mind. Okay. We're going to start breaking some of this down a little bit, all right? Because it'll help you to understand some of this. Okay, what are some positive states of mind? Just shout them out. Okay. Happiness, being happy, compassion, contentment, peace. There's no wrong words here, okay? I'm not really looking for anything. It's just getting you guys to start thinking of some positive states of mind, okay? What are some negative? Okay. Okay.
Greed.
Doubt. Greed.
Frustration.
Actually, I'm going to write this up here. Fear. Anything else? What else would you say? Would you say a generous mind is a positive? Generous? Okay, what else would you think? Patience. There you go. Attachment. We're going to go over that word a lot. I can tell you that one. Attachment. Okay.
Gratefulness.
Okay. So we can probably keep working on this. We're going to go into some of this stuff in a little bit, okay? Positive states of mind, negative states of mind. Now, we could go through all of this and keep adding things here and keep adding these things here. And we're going to break some of these things down because some of these kind of can be lumped up into things. And this anger and frustration, I'm going to deal with this one right now because I remember this one so clearly, okay? I think of myself as a fairly happy person, okay? I'm pretty even-minded, pretty good. I don't get angry. I really don't, not that often. So I remember telling myself, well, I didn't need to study on anger because I don't have anger. That's not one of my problems. I want to work on some of this other stuff. Anger's not, I don't have to worry about that one, right? Till I actually learned that even frustration is a form of anger because you don't just go usually straight to anger, do you? It starts to build. Frustration, impatience. Okay, so these are all forms of anger. I was really, really upset when I heard that one because I am. I can be frustrated. I can be impatient. Okay, so yes, we all have anger. We just may not think of it that way. Okay, I remember actually thinking that. Oh, I don't have to learn that one. Okay, so impatience, frustration, impatience. Okay, I'm going to put patient over here because a patient mind. Okay, now when you start looking at these lists, you can actually start to correlate them across, can't you? Okay, generous, greedy, right? They're opposites, right? Oh, we've got patients here. Never mind. I also spelled that like a hospital. Okay. So patience and anger actually are the opposing forces there, right? Okay. If you actually think about it, patience, what is the antidote to anger? Usually being a little bit more patient. Okay. Y'all, there's one major word that we're missing here on the actually, on both sides. So that there's two. Thank you. Okay. Okay. See how those kind of go? Okay. Grateful and greed can go across. Some of these, like I said, they lump into things. Contentment, you know, some of that stuff can go against doubt. I mean, you can kind of see how they would have opposing. Okay, so that's one of the things that you can kind of start to think about as you go into this practice. If you have problems with a certain aspect of your mind, with a certain negative aspect, there's going to be something to study. There's going to be an opposing virtuous state of mind. So I love that part. So if you have something that you have to deal with, just know there's going to be a virtuous state that you can counteract that with. Okay? So now imagine, just imagine if we could get rid of all this. Just imagine if you could get rid of every single speck of anger that you have, if you could never feel sad again, if you could never have any doubt or feel greedy, fear, just imagine if you could lose these things and only be here. Just think about that just for a second, because that's what we're saying is possible from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective. They say that this is possible to do. It's going to take work, but there's a path. We can do it. So there it is. That's what enlightenment is, removing all obscurations and all negativities and fully developing all virtuous and positive states of mind. That's it. That's how simple, isn't it? Now we just have to do it. All right? Okay. So the Buddha was a teacher. He was not a god. If he was a god, he could have said, boom, I give this all to you. But he's not a god. He was just a man who learned, who became enlightened. So since he was not a god, since he couldn't just do that for us, he did the next best thing. He started to teach. This is how I did it. Okay, so he's very similar to Sir Isaac Newton. Any of those people that discovered these things and then taught them, he didn't create it, he didn't make it up, he discovered it, and then he's going to teach it. Okay, so he's a teacher. They say that there are 84,000 teachings. Okay, on our altar here, these little boxes with the orange and red and blue wrappings around them, those are the teachings. Those are the teachings. Those are the teachings. If we pulled those down, they would be written in Tibetan. We can't read them, but we have two monks here who can. And so most of the time you'll find that we are studying the commentaries and Geshe-la and some of the other teachers and stuff. They're helping us to work through some of these things, but they're all here. Okay? They call them the sutras. Okay? These are the historical teachings. In many ways, we call them the Dharma. I think you might have heard that word. We talked a little bit about these, the Dharma. And the actual definition of it is that which protects. That's which holds, that's which protects. And we can talk about this. I think I said it last time, too. Buddhism and the definitions of many things, they're kind of like layers of an onion. We're always going to pull it back. They have several different meanings. We can talk about the Dharma in the conventional sense. They mean the teachings or the actions, okay? So that's the Dharma, these books. You know, this book is considered Dharma, okay? But from an ultimate sense, it is the realizations attained along the path to liberation and enlightenment. So the Dharma can be that awakening or that aha moment when you actually own it, when you get something, okay? That's Dharma too, okay? And that's because that's what this is all about, that. These books, all this is all about your mind. Okay, so that's what Dharma is. And Buddhism is about the mind. Everything in this room, all these colorful flags, all of these pictures and statues and paintings and colors are about your mind. Okay? The way I like to look at this stuff is that all of this stuff started, you know, 2,500 years ago. 2,000 years ago, they didn't have computers. They didn't have books. They didn't have pencils. Okay? They had the oral teachings, and that's how they learned. Okay? So they had the oral teachings, and they had different ways to show different things, and they had art. Okay? It's interesting to watch, like Geshe-la, if you come on Sundays and see Geshe-la, because they learn through oral teachings. They don't really read. They read and then they'll learn it and recite it and recite it and learn it and learn it. If you're ever sitting here and watching Geshe-la teach, you can see him going through that mental file cabinet. I mean, you can just watch it. It's phenomenal. Okay, we in the Western world, we really don't work that way. We've got PowerPoints. We've got all this, you know, visual aids, and I'm huge for that. Okay, obviously. But Geshe-la will do it all just by his memory. Okay, he knows thousands of texts, thousands of teachings, and you can just watch him do it. And so it just comes sometime. I swear you can see it. It's really awesome. So Buddhism is about the mind. These things are all about the mind. They all have meaning, okay? They all are telling us something. The prayer flags, all of these things have prayer flags, and the thought is that the wind would blow through these beautiful prayers and carry them to the world. What a beautiful thought. Just thinking about that makes my mind happier, okay? So some of these things. These tankas, okay, spiritual paintings, okay? I can look at that, and to me it's a PowerPoint. There's a teaching in there, and if I can learn, because I do know a lot of it, there's a lot I don't know, but it actually all means something. So it's a lesson plan. All right? So all of these things, they're all about teachings. These are victory banners, okay, all of these different things. They're teachings on things. Avalokiteshvara Chenrezig, 1,000 arms, okay? That's a beautiful story because he wanted to help everybody so bad that he broke into 1,000 pieces so he could help more people. Okay? These are beautiful stories. They make you think beautiful things. It's about compassion and love. So these are all about working with those positive states of mind. I'm starting to get off track. I'm excited about this stuff. All right. Do you guys have any questions? Nobody's talking again. Yes, ma'am. The colors are not supposed to, I don't think they're meant to really do that. They're about, if from Buddhism, Tibetan, you're in a Tibetan Buddhist kampa. Okay, if you go to Zen Buddhism, it's all very quiet. So that's more of a quiet type. These are have like the colors that have different meanings. And again, I can give you probably 10 different meanings. You've got all of the earth, the fire, the wind, okay, water, all of the earth elements and things like that. So all of the colors do have different meanings and very many layers of meanings. Okay, from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, okay, Tibet is a high, dry plateau without a lot of color to it. And so they loved color. They still do. Okay, so they're bringing it out. It's probably more of a cultural. Okay, as some one of the things that we talked about, as Buddhism tended to spread from India into Sri Lanka and Japan and China and Tibet, okay, it took on a little bit of the cultural aspects, socio-economic aspects, things like that, but the base core of Buddhism is all the same, okay? But there will be some sociological and some cultural differences, okay? So the core things are all the same. Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah, from a Tibetan. All of the monks from different schools and different lineages will wear different colors. And so the Tibetan Buddhism is the maroon and the gold. And then there's a little bit of a blue on the edge that brings in another lineage as well. You guys are the quietest class I've had. Okay, no more questions on that? Okay, so Buddhism is about the mind. We've got that. I'm going to make sure we've got the spread of Buddhism. We talked about this. In fact, we just actually talked about that. The two main strains, Hinayana and Mahayana. Again, it's all similar. So there isn't any major difference. Hinayana is more the individual release from suffering, and Mahayana is not only you, but you take everybody with you. You want everybody to be free from suffering. And they're very similar. There's not one better than the other. In fact, if you're Mahayana, you will be learning a lot of the Hinayana as well, because it's just like you can't go save somebody from the swimming pool unless you know how to swim. So it's very, very similar. And then you've got the Vajrayana as well. That's more of the tantric. When Buddhism actually went to Tibet, okay, a little bit later, and we'll get into some of that later, that's Lama Tsongkhapa, who's one of our lineages in the Gelupa tradition, okay. Tibetan Buddhism has four main schools. Denominations might be a good way for us in the West to look at things. Kagyu, Sakya, Gelug, Nyingma.
I did it.
All right. The Dalai Lama is the spiritual head of all of them. He is the leader of the Gelug. That's us, the Galupa tradition. You're in the Kadapa Center. We're a Galupa tradition. Lama Yeshe, Lama Zopa Rinpoche are the people that founded the FPMT. They're the two monks. Their pictures are right up here next to the Dalai Lama that founded the FPMT, part of the organization that is our parent. I'm really going through this fast. Those of you that were here last time will know that. There's more information on our website. The Kadampa Center, actually, we got our name. Lama Zopa Rinpoche gave us our name, Kadampa. And this means those who put the teachings of the Buddha into practice. That's what our name, Kadampa Center, means. Okay? Okay. How am I doing? Not too bad. Okay, so Buddhism is about the mind. Everything in here is about the mind, developing the positive states of mind that leads to happiness and removing the negative states of mind that cause sufferings. We just did that. Okay? Now, let's go through our definition of the mind so that we're all on the same page as to what we mean by the mind. Okay? From, again, a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, the mind is not the brain. Okay? From a Western perspective, we tend to go, oh, our mind's here. Okay? The mind is not the brain. The mind is not physical. Okay? The mind is not physical to us. Okay? What are some of the traits of a mind? We might use the word consciousness interchangeably. So our mind, our consciousness, our definition from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective is the mind is not the brain. It's non-physical. It's clear. Okay? So you can kind of think of it as either a clear sky, a clear lake, when there's no ripples. You know how you can go to that lake and you see all the reflections and stuff of the tree, that clear, smooth lake, or a mirror even. Okay, so it's clear. It is aware. Okay, basically we look at the mind with having six of these consciousnesses. From a Western point, we say sight, sound, smell, touch, taste, right? The five senses. Okay. The Tibetan Buddhists add one more to it, and we call that mental awareness. Okay. That ability to know. Okay. The function of the mind is to know. All right. So sight, sound, smell, touch, taste, and mental awareness. These are all definitions. This is all part of the definition of the mind from the Buddhist perspective. I'm going to say this last part, we'll talk about it later. From a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, there is no beginning and no end to our mind. Okay? It's part of rebirth. We'll get there in about two classes. All right? So this is what we are talking about. This is what I'm talking about. As we start to move forward, this is what we're talking about is the mind, the consciousness. Okay? Any questions about this? Okay? Go ahead. Nope. Good question. Okay. So, I'm going to make sure I stay on track because I can get too off. Okay. Okay, so thought. I'm going to go into it a little bit. We're going to get to this in some other classes too. Okay. So, our mind is this clear, pretend that our mind is the clear blue sky. Okay. Thoughts that go through our mind are like the clouds moving through the sky. Okay? So it's just that there's a thought. I'm thinking that's what I got to do today. That's a thought. Let it go. Our mind is this clear blue sky. Okay? So the thoughts, these negative thoughts, this anger and all that stuff, it's not part of our mind. That's why we can get rid of it. Okay? So our mind is this clear non-physical, it's aware. They say that you are your thoughts. Well, you can change your thoughts. So you're actually not your thoughts, your mind. You can control your mind. Okay, think of your mind as this clear. I like the blue sky analogy. A lot of people will use something else, that lake. Okay, or pretend, I know one. So I bring in a soda bottle full of water. Okay, I've got this water in a soda bottle, right? I'm going to add a bunch of dirt. I'm going to add a bunch of junk to it. I'm going to shake it up. all that stuff is mixed up in there, okay, is that dirt part of the water? Or will it settle? It'll settle. The dirt is not part of that water. Drop some poison in there. Is that the water? No. You can separate out. If you had the right filter, you could separate the dirt. You could separate that poison from the water. So your mind is like that. Your mind is like that clear lake, that clear blue sky, that mirror. Okay, so you've got a mirror up here on the wall. If I was right there, my reflection would be there. Okay, but I'm not the mirror. The mind is like the mirror. Okay, like I said, we're only going to be able to go through this stuff. You can go deep diving and discovering Buddhism. They have a whole section called Mind and Its Potential. 6 weeks where you'll talk about this in depth with a phenomenal teacher. Okay, but does this make sense? So the analogy that seems to work for me, there's another one, the ocean. Okay, so if you're down in the ocean, not on top of those choppy waves, but down, okay, and you've got those fish going through, okay, the fish is like the thoughts going through your mind, and your mind is like that water. Okay, so your mind is clear, it's knowing, it's non-physical, its job is to know. That's what it does. Okay? And awareness, we can break awareness into sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and mental awareness. Okay, that's how we start to know things. Okay? So, if we were going to break it down, just sight. Okay? So, sight, this pen, I can look at this pen. I can, sight means I can see the shape of it. I can see the color of it. Okay? If I put it in my mouth, I could taste it. You know, there's nothing to listen to with the pen, maybe except for the clicks. Okay? So, it's how you break all these things down. But then take it to the mind. The mind is the one that puts all those things together. Okay? So that's kind of a neutral thing. Then we can start adding the layers of I like that or I don't like it. Here comes attachment. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. Okay? So this is the mind. Does this make sense? Following me a little bit? Anybody falling asleep? Bored? Want to go? How much time? Okay. Okay. Now that we understand this, now we're going to go back over here. I'm kind of jumping around, but it really does start to come all together a little bit later. Okay, so we have our positive states of mind. We're going to go back now to the Four Noble Truths. This was a handout that you can find online. Let me make sure I'm staying on track because I can tend to get way off. Ah, we're doing good. I haven't led this class in a while, so I'm always hoping I'm staying somewhat close to the curriculum. Okay. Okay, so now we kind of have that down a little bit, right? Positive states of mind, negative states of mind. Everybody understands that. You can kind of get a little bit of a glimpse of how if we got rid of this, we'd be happier. If we got rid of all of it, enlightenment doesn't sound so far-fetched now, does it? That's all we mean. Okay? So now let's go to the Four Noble Truths. Okay? So we talked about last week the turning of the wheel. Okay? You'll hear that term a lot. The Buddha turned the wheel of Dharma. He actually did three teachings that they, I think the best way to put this, three major big teachings that really kind of do the whole framework on Buddhism. Okay? And the first turning of the wheel was the teaching called the Four Noble Truths. And this is the one that we talked about last week that's all about suffering, suffering, suffering. This is the one that gives the Buddhists a bad name and says all they talk about is suffering and they're so depressed. Okay? So this is where we're going to change that because actually, the people that I know personally that are great practitioners of this are probably some of the most joyful people in my life, all right? Because they're practicing how to get rid of the suffering. So they, again, this is, it's probably one of the most joyful things that you can do is to recognize this, talk about it, so we get rid of it. Okay? So we're not depressing people. We're actually very happy people. And why? Because we practiced that. Okay? So, again, this is a handout. This is handout number 5, I think. And we're going to go through some of this. Okay? So the first noble truth, the truth of suffering. Remember last week we changed the word. We called it dukkha instead of suffering. Okay? For those of you that weren't here last week, it's all about making sure that we're saying the same things, that we're understanding the right words. And Westerners, we use words like suffering, and we have an instant definition of what we mean. Okay? Whereas these teachings and what the Buddha was talking about, these have been translated like 4 times, because they were originally in Pali and Sanskrit and Tibetan, and now they're in English, so we're kind of losing some of the meaning. Okay? So when we think of suffering from a Western point of view, we're going to define some of these things. So we actually used the word dukkha because it was a little bit more encompassing than suffering. Okay, so the truth of suffering, the first noble truth is the truth of suffering. There is suffering. We live with suffering in this world. The second is the truth of the cause of suffering. The third noble truth is the truth of the cessation of suffering. The fourth noble truth, the truth of the path. Okay, we're going to use this for the rest of the class. We're going to break these down. How much time? I think we got about a half an hour. Okay, and I'll probably do this in about 20 minutes so we can have a few minutes. Okay, so we're going to kind of break some of this down. The truth of suffering. This first one is basically admitting that we're sick. Okay? It's kind of like the AA class, you know. You have to admit that you're an alcoholic before you can do something about it. It's all of that. That's the truth. Admit that, you know, there is suffering in the world. Okay? We are suffering. So once we actually admit it, then we can do something about it. Okay? So the second noble truth is the truth of the cause of suffering. This is like when we go to the doctor and they start to diagnose it. So this is becoming aware of it, admitting to it, then we go to the doctor so we can figure out what's causing it. Okay, and the third noble truth, the truth is the cessation, that, you know what, yes, it can be cured. And then the truth of the path, this is how. Okay, so these are all just steps, and we're going to break them down a little bit more. And let's just start with the truth of suffering. Okay. They all know me, right? I can lose that. And we got our happy states. You guys will remember some of that stuff, too. Okay. There are basically 3 types of suffering. We're going to break these down a little bit. Okay, the first one, you'll hear this said a couple of different ways, but the first one is called the suffering of suffering, or the suffering of pain. And what they mean by that is you broke your arm. This is all the stuff that we actually think about when Westerners, when we're talking about suffering. Oh, you got sick. You broke your arm. All of these bad things when bad things happen. Okay? This is what we mean by suffering. Okay? From the Tibetan Buddhist perspective, we're going to add a couple more layers to this. So the suffering of suffering, that's just that regular suffering that we tend to think of as suffering. Okay? The second one is suffering of change. Okay, suffering of change. This one is still easy. Okay, suffering of change. I think we did it today. Today would be a good example. Today we went outside. Oh, it was so nice. It was warm. Enjoyed it. Wow, you know what? It's getting hot. I'm not liking it so much. Okay? I think I'm going to go inside. I'm going to turn the air conditioning. I'm going to go inside because I'm too hot. So I go inside. I've got the air conditioner. Oh, that feels good. Much better now. And then 15, 20 minutes later, you know, wow, I'm getting cold. I'm too cold. All right? So So the suffering of change. Heat was good, then it was too much. Okay? So then I went in, got cold, got cooler, then I got cold. Suffering of change. Because things are not permanent and they change all the time, we suffer. All right? Another good one, chocolate cake. This is one of my favorite examples, chocolate cake. I love chocolate cake. Okay? This is the suffering of change. If I eat chocolate cake, that first piece tastes awesome. Second piece, still pretty good. Third piece, yeah, maybe not. Fourth piece, oh, no. Fifth piece, I am sick. Sixth piece, you know what? I can't even look at chocolate cake again. Suffering of change. Okay? If chocolate cake, if there was happiness in chocolate cake, then no matter when I ate it, no matter what I did with it, it would always make me happy, wouldn't it? But that sixth piece of chocolate cake does not make me happy. Okay? Suffering of change. Suffering of change. My high school boyfriend. I loved him. I was so happy with him. And he dropped me. I don't like him. I don't like him now. Actually, I hate him now. So, all of a sudden, that's suffering of change. Things are going to change. Okay? So that is suffering of change. We do this all of the time. Okay, the third one, we're not going to get into too much because it can be, it's kind of a hot mess of confusion for a lot of different things. And this is called all-pervasive suffering. All-pervasive suffering. Okay, this one's a little bit harder to understand. Just because we live in this world, we're suffering. Just because we live here, just because the things that we have to do in order to live here cause suffering. You know, no matter what we do, we're karmically struggling with this all the time. Okay? This is really hard to understand. Like I said, we're just glancing across the surface of this. But all pervasive suffering, just because we're living in this world, we're causing suffering for others sometimes. And there's a lot of times nothing we can do about it. Okay? This is some of that stuff that I can try to think about, you know. But just because I live in a home with wood, you know, I worry about the rainforest, I worry about, you know, the animals, I worry about everything all the time. There's suffering. Sometimes, you know, you can't take it so far because then you can't be crushed by it. Okay? You've got to use compassion and wisdom. That's kind of one of my big mantras. I've got tattoos that say that. Try to stay in that middle way. Okay? Use that compassion and wisdom to deal with that all-pervasive suffering. Okay? There's a joke that kind of goes around. In order to be a Buddhist, you have to be smart and nice. You can't just be nice and compassionate because then you will do things that you probably shouldn't. You wouldn't give an alcoholic liquor, even though they're begging for it, and the nice thing would be to give them. But you use the wisdom not to do it. So you have to be nice and smart. Okay? I know. Think about it. It's hilarious. Okay, so this is the all-pervasive suffering. We're not going to go any further into that one because that one's got a lot of layers. There's a lot of very advanced teachers for this. But these first two are easy enough to deal with. Okay? And when I say that, they're easy enough to deal with, they're easy enough to talk about, they're easy enough to understand. And once they're easy enough to define, we can do something about them. Right? You guys are so quiet. Okay, everybody stand up. Jake, you are so quiet. I don't think I've ever had a class this quiet. All right, you can sit down. I know. No, this is like too quiet. I'm sure. That sounds like exactly me. Okay. Does this make sense? Does this make sense a little bit? Okay? You can look a lot of this stuff up. There's a lot of good teachings on it. Okay? But it's just trying to work through some of these things. And it's because we can. This is what I find so inspiring Okay, I don't find any of this depressing. I don't find doing death meditation depressing. I don't find any of it depressing because it's something I can work with. And then if I work with it and become more familiar with it, then I'm not afraid of things anymore because I've become more familiar with them. I can do something. I've got a tool. I can do something about this. I can change my mind. I can be a nicer person because I can recognize it. All right? We've all seen these things. We've seen people with cancer, okay, that seem to be happy, that don't seem to be going through. I can give you a specific example just on the news the other day, all right, how people's minds are. And we're not talking about judging here, but just to show the different levels of different minds, okay. Those terrible tornadoes that just went through, right, over in Nebraska, two. Side by side. It was scary coverage. Okay, so they're going around, they're doing those interviews with people. That's one of those things I hate. You know, oh, you just lost everything. How do you feel? Okay. Never understood that one. So this one woman had lost everything, and she was just devastated. I mean, she was just devastated. She lost her house. She lost all of this stuff, and she was, you know, crying and very upset and very emotional, understandably, very emotional about it. Okay, and then they go talk to somebody else. Same thing. They just lost everything, but they're like, we lost everything, but it's just stuff. We're all safe. It's all good. They weren't devastated. They had the same thing happen, exact same thing. This one was completely devastated, and these people looked at it just slightly differently. Okay, not judging. It's just different. Different people handle the same thing differently, okay? We could have, you know, all of us will react differently to things for a lot of different reasons, but, you know, I'm a cancer survivor, okay? So I used to go in for chemo treatments all the time, and you'd see all these different people, and there were some people that were just having a very difficult time emotionally with it, and then there was this other side of the room that was, you know, they were the cool ones, they were the funny ones, and it was all okay. Well, I sat over there, you know, but it's just, everybody's handling things differently. And so it's what's going on, how are they handling the things, how are they handling their suffering. We think things that make us happy, money, okay, if there was happiness in money, it certainly would allow some freedoms and stuff, but then all of the actors and actresses in Hollywood that have all that money, a lot of them don't seem very happy. So it's just trying to look at your mind, trying to see how you can work with it and knowing, having the confidence to know that there are things that you, each one of you, can do with it. That's what Tibetan Buddhism is all about. They are saying you could become enlightened if you wanted to work on it. It's all in your hands. It's not in mine. It's in yours. So check it out. Okay. So, dukkha, the suffering of change, all-pervasive suffering. Truth of the cause. Oh, please. Somebody spoke. Hello, the mic.
Is there the assumption that the suffering is not reality? And you get to a point where you realize that there is no suffering. Is there that concept within Buddhism? That what we see is perception.
Okay. I know what you're saying. We're going to be real careful with that question, and I'm going to explain that a little bit. It is. This is a directional mic. Okay, so the difference between this, a directional mic, and I don't want to squeak here, is if you talk into it like this, it will work very, very well, but if you talk into it like that, you can't hear it. So you got to talk into it like this. It's called directional mic. Say it again. Like this.
The question I asked was, is there the concept of the suffering, is it actually reality, or is it just our perception of what we think is reality?
Okay. So, if a truck hits you, is that real? Ouch. Yeah. We want to be real, real careful that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, Okay, there is a conventional reality. We do live in this world. Things are real. Things will happen. And, yes, that truck was real. Okay? Now, what we're talking about, so we are not nihilist. There is not nothingness. There is a reality. Okay? So, go to the doctor, take your meds, do all the things you're supposed to do. There is reality. We live in this world. There is reality. How we choose to react to the things in this world. Okay, so you got hit by that truck. You're in the hospital. You're, you know, broken bones and all that kind of stuff. Okay, you have the choice. You can actually not be suffering while you're laying in that hospital bed. Okay, am I making sense? Okay, so you can be laying in that hospital bed. I'm going to give you a direct example. Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who is our spiritual director of the FPMT, that's him here with the Dalai Lama. He was just here teaching. Okay, he had a stroke about 2 years ago. Okay, I saw footage. I've met him. I've worked with him just this last month. Okay, but I saw a video of him 2 years ago after the stroke, where he was working with the nurse on physical therapy because he lost one side of his body, and so they were working on trying to get mobility back, okay, to do this stuff. And normally, when you start to work on these things, there's a lot of pain involved, okay, so you can only do it a little bit. You got to work into it and stuff. And he would laugh the whole time his arm was going up, laugh. And it's like the nurse was like trying to, you know, slower. So he's so advanced that he would, you know, I'm sure I'd be going, whoa, you know. But you can work with these things. Some people have a very high pain threshold, but there's different things on how is your mind while you're going through this. We're talking about the mind. And so you've seen people in great pain. You've seen people that should be in great pain. They don't show it. You've seen people that, you know, do amazing feats of strength. Their daughter's trapped underneath the car. They lift the car. Your mind is so powerful. How you deal with that, that's what we're talking about. Does that help? Make sense? Anybody else? Chris, you fact-checking me? Okay. A couple others of you guys in here, I think, have some things there. Okay. So the second noble truth, the truth of the cause of suffering. Okay, so there is a cause. Okay. It's all the various mental afflictions as well as the actions of body, speech, and mind arising from karma, okay, arising from the mental afflictions that are the cause of our sufferings, okay, but we can summarize them into 6 root afflictions, and we actually started working on them here, okay, now we're going to pull those down into 6, okay, ignorance, okay, anger, attachment. We're going to talk about attachment so that you know what I'm talking about, because my definition of attachment, I think, is going to be a little different than yours. Pride. 5. Doubt. 6. Wrong view. Okay. These are the cause of suffering. These are 6 of the causes. Okay, we actually can put a lot of these things right into there. Anger, jealousy, doubt, wrong view, pride. All right. So these are the cause of our suffering. These are the cause of our mental suffering right there. How much time? Okay, so let's break these down. Ignorance. All right. Ignorance is not bliss. We use that in the Western language all the time, and sure, it, in some ways it makes sense. Well, I didn't know, so it didn't have to bother you. But you know what? Whose responsibility is that? Okay, to learn these things. Each of us has our own responsibility. So we should be looking for the information. We should be trying to figure these things out. Okay? So ignorance, you know, you're here. You're looking. Okay, so you're not willing to live with it. You're checking it out, right? Okay. Anger, obviously, I think we all rank that one as a pretty high one. And we've talked about anger being everything from impatience, frustration, okay, and then it can build. So anger is huge. There are books and books and books about how to deal with anger. People spend a fortune going to psychologists how to deal with anger. We have anger management classes, okay, anger. Okay, attachment. Let's talk about attachment. Because we tend to think about attachment. In the Western world, we kind of think about that as a good thing, don't we? Oh, I'm attached. I'm very attached to my children. I'm very attached to my husband. I'm very attached. We think about it as good. I'm attached to, you know, that TV show. We think of attachment as kind of a good word. Okay? Before we go into attachment and understand it, what's a good definition of the word love?
Acceptance.
Okay. Now, maybe. I'm going to come back to that one. You might want to think about that. Acceptance. So that means you're going to accept somebody?
Fully.
Accept somebody fully? No matter if they're different? Is there a little bit of, well, I'm going to accept that? Is there a little bit of, well, I'm going to accept that? Could be. There shouldn't be.
Yeah.
There probably is, though. Shouldn't be. Okay. The Buddhist definition of love, Tibetan Buddhist definition of love, is wishing that person or that thing, that person, happiness. You want that person to be happy. If I truly loved you, I want you to be happy. Period. Okay? Love. You want that person, that animal, that sentient being to be happy. That's love. Okay? Compassion. I don't want that person to suffer. Okay? Freedom from suffering. Okay, you want that person to be happy. Okay, let's go back to love. Wishing that person happiness. Okay, I love you. We're going to be married. We're going to love each other. We love each other. Okay, we love. All right? And so my love has some attachment to it. Because guess what? I'm only going to love you if you love me back. I'm only going to love you if you do what I want you to do. I'm only going to love you as long as you don't love anybody else. Okay? My happiness is dependent on everything he does. I have strings attached to my love. Okay? Attachment. Okay? How many parents do we have in here? How many parents have children? Okay? That, I'm a parent, so that's probably the most purest love that there could be, because we would give up our lives. We would just, in a hot second, right? If our child was in danger, there, without even thinking about it. Could you do that for anybody else in this room? Don't think so. Okay. But you see, I'm just trying to get you to understand that true love with really no attachment, okay? Your children, there's times that you can just strangle them. Still love them, okay? But when you have attachment to it, you're flavoring that. You're grasping, okay? Attachment means that you're going to take and you're going to magnify all of the positive qualities, okay? You're going to magnify. You are the handsomest man in the whole world. You're just going to magnify these wonderful qualities, and you're going to totally not see the real qualities. Okay? So you change. You look in those rose-colored glasses, that attachment. You're grasping at these things. Okay? You can have an attachment to not aversion, kind of that opposite. Okay? I have an attachment to not eating certain Danish food. You know? So there's certain things that go like this. So you have attachment and aversion. Okay, attachment is grasping at things and kind of exaggerating the good qualities. Okay, not seeing things as they really are. Okay? So if you truly loved that person, if I truly loved that person, then my high school boyfriend who dumped me, okay, I wouldn't have hated him because I love him. I want him to be happy, even if that means not with me. Okay? Even if that meant not with me. Okay? But that love, if we could have love purely, if we could learn to love without attachment and truly, truly understand the difference, because right now all of us have that love, and it does have attachment to it. How many of you are married? Do I have couples in here? Okay? So if you truly could live and learn to love without attachment, okay, you'd really want that other person to be happy, really, no matter what. So you'd have all the patience in the world. Okay, you'd have all the, and it has to work both ways, you know, but you can't worry about the other person. All you can do is worry about yourself. You can't change his mind, but you can change yours. You can't change her mind, but you can change yours. So does attachment, does that make a little sense now? Okay, so it's that grasping, and that's doing that exaggeration of what this is, and because there's a little bit of you involved in that, because that is about you, it's not about them. I love him because he loves me, because he takes me out to dinner, because he, you know, does this or does that or doesn't do this, okay? But that's all those definitions and all those strengths, okay? And when you don't get what you want, do you still love him? Maybe not as much. Maybe I love him, but I don't like him, okay? So attachment, okay? Does that make sense? A little bit now? Yes. Oh, his father was absolutely attached to him. Yeah. That's right. Very good. So what he was saying is that actually in some ways that's how this all started, because the Buddha's father, Shakyamuni, Prince Gautama, his father was very attached to his own idea of what he wanted his son to do. He loved his son, but it was kind of in some ways going to be based around this way. He was trying to really steer. Okay, yes. No, go for it. Okay. So we're kind of going down, and I love questions, so go for it. And he is going to help too, or some of you guys too. Okay, so in some ways you're using the attachment word from a Western perspective. Okay? So now let's go through it this way. Okay, so you love your parents. And you remember those times where you just grew up and they were everything. You loved them unconditionally. And just you didn't even think about them because you didn't know. You're young. I remember the first time I realized my mom had a life. I do. I remember sitting up and I'm trying to remember how old I was. We were up in my mom and dad's room. I was sitting on the bed. She was getting ready for something, and somehow the conversation was, she started talking about one time when she was a child and she had wanted something. I can't remember exactly how it started, but I remember all of a sudden that awareness of my mom was a person. You were a little girl. You wanted things. All of a sudden, I remember the first time I actually saw her as a person and not just as my mom. Do you guys remember those type of moments? I just remember being shocked. I think, you know, I'm trying to remember. I think, I hate to say it, but I was probably 9 or 10. I remember, I could be totally off. I have nothing, but I just remember being shocked that she was a, I remember that. You were a little girl? Really? I just remember that. So all of a sudden, that gave me a fuller view of her. It actually, you know, I in some ways loved her more because I had a more realistic view of her. Okay. Now, I also remember the first time that she pissed me off, and I got grounded. I didn't like her. Okay. And she was wrong. All of those things. So it's all of these. Okay. So my love for her never changed. She's gone now. But we certainly had a roller coaster of a ride throughout that whole thing. And was there attachment to it? Absolutely. Because, you know, when I lost her, I was devastated. Okay? Now, because I'm a practitioner, I had to sit with that. Okay? And I had to separate what is my grief for her and what she is going to miss and all of those things, and what is that grief because I lost my mom. Okay, what is that grief that was about me? That was the whiny, look at the victim, me, because I lost my mom. And that was about me. There's a very real grief for her and all of the things that she will miss and not know, and that my family will not know, and that my grandson will never know. Okay, so I have that, and that's a very real thing. That's a very real grief, and that's not a bad, okay? Grief and sadness does not have to be negative. That can be over here. That's a pure emotion, okay? But that grief and sadness that has the attachment to it is not good. That grief that people feel when people pass and they're devastated and then the whole world stops and everything around them stops and all of that, you can take that too far. I'm going to say that very carefully, okay? But just separate what's the real sadness, the real grief that you feel for that person, okay, who's going to miss these things or that other people will never get to know her, and what's that one that's all about me and that pity for me. Does that make sense? I know I'm off track. Okay, guess what? We're done. Well, I'm not going to keep you late because I promised I'd start on time and I'd end on time. I will take it from here. We actually don't even have time to do another meditation unless you all want to go 3 more minutes. I can talk really fast. Okay, take a vote. Do a meditation? All right. I'm so sorry. Okay, we're actually, because you're so good and you ask questions, I'll do one of my favorite meditations. How's that? And I'm actually not joking. I'm very serious. Okay. This is a meditation called Counting the Breath. So we talked about when we start a meditation practice and when you have like a daily practice, okay, and I'm going to explain this from my point of view because I have a daily practice. I really do try to go sit down. I don't do it consistently, and sometimes I'm off, but I've been doing this for a long time, so when I do sit down, I've got a method that I can kind of get in the mode pretty easily. This is called counting the breath. I use this every time I sit down as part of my prep because it works for me. One of the reasons that I'm trying to go through some of these things and one of the reasons that this type of meditation is built into this class is to let you try these things and see what works for you. Okay, there may be one that stands out to you that just seems to kind of get you in a better state of mind or in a calmer state of mind. This is one that works for me. Okay, so let's go into that 7-point meditation posture. Okay, feet flat on the floor or cross legs if you're sitting. And work your way up your body. If you're in a chair, lean a little bit forward. Have your back straight, not totally stiff, but straight. Your shoulders back, so your chest is open. Your hands can be either on your knees or your right hand can rest in your left. Your thumbs slightly touching and resting in your lap. Your shoulders are back. Your head is slightly tilted forward. Your jaw and your mouth are relaxed, and your tongue is lightly touching the roof of your mouth behind your teeth, and your eyes are either gently closed or slightly open. Okay, focus your attention on your breathing and just breathe naturally. Just focus the mind on the rising and falling of your shoulders and chest as you inhale and exhale gently. Allow your mind to settle and become calm and present, ready to engage in meditation. your motivation. You're going to create an altruistic motivation for this meditation session, thinking that you're not meditating just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate and develop your mind to become a wiser and kinder person, able to be a benefit to all beings. Start by focusing your attention at the opening of the nostrils. Pay attention to the very subtle sensation as you breathe in and out through your nose. You can feel certain sensations as the air passes, the small hairs move, or cooler sensations as you inhale, warmer as you exhale. Don't follow the air into your body or out into the surrounding environment, but place your attention on the sensations associated with the breath at the opening of your nostrils. And your job is to keep your attention firmly placed on those sensations only. As you inhale and exhale, mentally count each inhalation and exhalation together as one. Count from 1 to 10, concentrating only on those sensations. When you reach 10, begin again at 1. If you become distracted or if the mind wanders to other things and moves away, then begin again at 1. Even if you never get past 2, it's not a problem. The point is to train your mind to focus on one point only, and this concentration can take some practice to attain. So we're going to inhale and exhale, and count each inhalation and exhalation as 1. Once you start to attain a little bit of mastery over this technique, once you reach 10, rather than counting from 1 to 10, count backwards. Finally, dedicate your positive energy and insights to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. Okay, bring your attention back to the room. Now, that's actually a meditation, again, I do every single time because this one just works for me, okay? And you count your breaths. Now, out of curiosity, anybody know why you would count on an inhalation? 1. Inhalation 2. Any thoughts on that? What happens if you don't inhale? You die. So we count the inhalations. All right. And again, this one I use. Now, I'm going to be honest and say that there have been times where I'll go in, because I have a golf at home, and I'll sit down. I've got a nice high cushion because I've got a bum knee. I can't sit down there. And I'll sit, and I'll clear it. I've got the incense, so I set the tone. That's part of a daily practice. You set it, and you do the same thing all the time because it allows you to get your mind in that place. Okay, and I will sit down, and I will start this. And the practice is to go from 1 to 10, 1 to 10, 1 to 10, 1 to 10. Anytime your mind is distracted, if you're on 5, start over. Okay, I can go from 1 to 10, okay? My problem is that sometimes all of a sudden, I'm at 25. I'm at 52. Start over. So I know that I'm not practicing. I know that my mind is off. That's what meditation is. It's not doing. It's being aware and bringing the mind back. Okay, so it's not getting disturbed or distracted or depressed. If you only get to 52 times, so be it. Just keep working on it. Okay, like I said, I do it all the time, still to this day, and I've been doing this for years. Okay, and all of a sudden, if I'm not there, but once I do realize that my mind is there, then I'm ready, and for some reason, then I can. But I've been up to 89. It's just what happens. If you get really good at it, then try going 1 to 10, 10 to 1, 1 to 10. So work with your mind. Go to 12. Go to 21. Pick an odd number. Okay, once you think you've mastered it, shake it up. Okay, then go to an odd number. So just so that you're working with, make sure that you own it. Okay, and if you feel like it works, then that's fine. This is just one that I really like. There's several. I'm just always going to try to be honest and say if there's something that I tend to like for different reasons, this is one of them. I can't thank you enough for coming. I really appreciate it. Please have patience with me as I get off track. And if you've got questions, you can email me again. Some of you already have. I appreciate that. I enjoy that. I'm usually always around. So track me down, and if you've got any questions, just let me know. If I don't know the answer, which I probably won't, I certainly do know who does. Okay? Thank you very much. Have a good night.